Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Welcome into Outkick the Show. I am your fearless leader, Clay Travis. I hope all of you are having a fantastic Monday. I had a fabulous weekend, spent it out on the lake on Sunday, running around with my boys. It was pretty outstanding, and we did some tubing. I also had a good weekend, lots of fun all around, just a good time. I appreciate all of you. I hope you had fantastic weekends as well. Encourage you to go subscribe to this podcast, as well as go subscribe to the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show. We had a big debate about Cuba and what American policy should be in Cuba going forward. Lots of good discussion there, and also the continued vaccine controversy and fallout. I will be on Tucker Carlson tonight, at least I'm scheduled to be, talking about the COVID policies in place and other stories as well. So encourage you to tune in there. I'll also be on Fox Bet Live here in a little bit talking about the British Open, the NBA Finals, Conor McGregor and Poirier, the fight there, and also Novak Djokovic going for a fourth Grand Slam and maybe also trying to win a gold medal, something that I don't think has ever been done before. So much to dive into. But right off the top, I want to tell you, you get up to $1,000, no risk wager. All you have to do is go to FanDuel.com/clay. That is FanDuel.com/clay, and you will be well on your way to hopefully getting $1,000 free, no risk. All you have to do to sign up is go to FanDuel.com/clay. All right, let's start about the biggest controversy in the world of sports right now. So Major League Baseball All-Star Game, of course, was moved to Denver, a disastrous decision. I still feel bad for the people of Atlanta, for Braves fans, for everyone over Rob Manfred not being able or willing to hold the ground and being forced to because he's an imbecile, to move the All-Star Game out of Atlanta and move it to Denver instead. So I believe the Home Run Derby is going on tonight because we are debating it on Fox Bet Live and talking about Shohei Ohtani. So let me talk about Shohei Ohtani for a moment. I've said, and I tweeted probably a couple weeks ago, that I think the Shohei Ohtani story is the most undercovered in all of sports right now. 33 home runs for Ohtani at the All-Star break. He is pitching at a very high level. Right now, he is Babe Ruth. I mean, if you go look at the statistics that Babe Ruth brought to bear when he was a pitcher and he was a hitter, Shohei Ohtani right now is performing at a Babe Ruth-like level, the likes of which, frankly, no one of my generation or no one around my age has ever seen before. He's favored to win the Major League Baseball Home Run Derby, and he will be the starting pitcher in the All-Star Game this week. So Stephen A. Smith on First Take went on and talked about Shohei Ohtani, and he said, and this is what all of the flashpoint is for, "I don't think it helps that the number one face," talking about Major League Baseball, "is a dude that needs an interpreter so you can understand what the hell he's saying in this country." This is Stephen A. Smith. Now, the pitchforks are out now for Stephen A. Smith. Let me just say right at the top, I'm not a cancel culture guy, right? I don't believe that cancel culture should exist. But I think one reason people are reacting to Stephen A. is because ESPN has pretty clearly made it transparent that you can be racist, and I'm not saying this is racist, but you can be racist, like Jalen Rose calling Kevin Love a token white basketball player and saying the only reason he was on the team was because he was white and the NBA was afraid of having an all-black team, even though they had an all-black team in 2000, 2008, 2004, and 2016, was a racist statement. Nothing happened to Jalen Rose because the standard of speech at ESPN for a black guy is different than the standard of speech would be for a white guy. And so Stephen A. Smith says what he did. And again, I'll give you the quote. And so I am not in favor. I want to be transparent and clear with all of you. I'm not in favor of any sort of cancel culture here. But Stephen A. Smith talking about Shohei Ohtani, I don't think it helps that the number one face is a dude that needs an interpreter so you can understand what the hell he's saying in this country. And you can go watch the video and see it for yourself. Now, the larger context of the conversation was about Major League Baseball and branding. And certainly this has been a major conversation for a long time because Mike Trout, who is a teammate of Shohei Ohtani on the LA Angels, is the best player in baseball and has been for the past several years, but he's not a very loud, marketable guy. And so, Major League Baseball, he hasn't really drawn that much attention outside of his unique talents. Now, the question that Stephen A. is asking, if in a larger debate, is an intriguing one if you give him the benefit of the doubt here, because the larger context is, to what extent does marketability in America rely on an athlete being American? And I don't know the answer to that right now. I'm sure there is data to tell you, hey, LeBron James is a valuable asset in the NBA from a marketability perspective. What is the difference if LeBron James had the exact same talent but was instead a foreign-born player? Or think about it this way, the NBA, which now has a lot of international players, how much more value in the United States itself would Giannis or Luka have if they were American-born players? In other words, does that matter? Is it still a significant factor? Or is in this day and age where you're from less significant? Let me give you an example. When I was a kid growing up, there were very few international stars who played sports. Nowadays, FIFA soccer, for instance, is so popular that Ronaldo and Messi are wildly popular in the United States, even though they don't even play a sport in the United States, right? This is an interesting question. Or if you think about it, when I was a kid, the only real athletes I remember that were international and had any sort of appeal in the United States, by and large, were like the Boris Beckers, the Yvonne Lindels, if you cared about them, Stefan Edberg. If you watch tennis, and I loved to watch tennis back in the day, international tennis stars, soccer wasn't big enough for people to care about, at least where I grew up. Tennis was one. And then there were a few foreign NBA players when I was a kid, but not really that many. Most of American sports were populated by American sports stars. Vlade Divac, for instance, would have been a guy early on that would have had a lot of interest. Drazen Petrovic. There were relatively few foreign players playing in America. If that were the conversation, it would be a conversation that you could have. The way that Stephen A. Smith conveyed this, I don't know enough, frankly, about Shohei Ohtani to know how well he does or does not speak English. But the way that this came off is going to be messy for Stephen A. and for ESPN because of their inconsistent speech standards and their consistency of going out and suspending or firing people based on what they say, not fitting the appropriate speech standards. In Major League Baseball, for instance, Curt Schilling got fired, right? And so, what is the standard for speech at ESPN? They've also punished Rachel Nichols because of something that she didn't even say on the air. And I also think there should be, in my opinion, a difference between what's said on the air and what is said in your private life. Because ESPN is distributing what's said on air, but if you're talking in your private life, to me, that's a different standard. My standard, in general, is I'm opposed to cancel culture. I don't think we gain anything by sitting around and waiting for someone to say something that you decide is unacceptable. And I mean you, like the public, social media, usually it's left-wingers who decide what is and what is not appropriate to be said in our culture today. And I don't think we gain very much by saying, oh, there has to be consequences for this opinion or that opinion. And those consequences are suspensions or firings or whatever they are. I don't think that's a healthy place for our country to be. In fact, if you regularly listen to this show, you would know that my two biggest twin pillars upon which I fight against is, I think identity politics and cancel culture and the combination of the two is the biggest threat to American life today. That's what I believe. Other people disagree, but I think the idea that your immutable identity, something that is a characteristic that you don't choose, your race, your gender, you don't choose those things at birth. The fact that those define you in any way, to me, represents a threat because it slices and dices us all up based on what we look as opposed to what we think, okay? It's cosmetic in nature. And I also think cancel culture. So to my knowledge, I have never said this person has to be fired for saying this thing. But what I will say is I do think the standards have to be evenly applied. And this is where people get upset at me, a lot of people. I believe that whether you're white, black, Asian, Hispanic, gay, straight, male, female, whatever your identity is, I think we need to apply the same standard of speech no matter what. And right now we don't. Because, and I used Jalen Rose as an example a couple weeks ago, because when Jalen Rose came out and called Kevin Love a token, if a white hockey analyst, and I don't even know if this is true, if a black hockey player had made the U.S. hockey team, and someone came out and said, well, that black guy made it as a token because they didn't want to have an all-white hockey team, that analyst would get fired and probably never work in sports again. And the same thing is true of other sport analysts, right? I don't know, a swimming team. If you said, hey, the only reason that person of that race is on the team is because they're a token and you were a white person, you would get fired, right? This is pretty clear. And so why do we have different standards of speech based on the race or the gender of the speaker? That's where I'm calling for consistency. And by the way, I want a lenient consistency, right? You don't have to agree with everything that you hear on television. You don't have to agree with everything that you hear on radio. And as a firm believer in the marketplace of ideas, I believe when you constrain what can and cannot be said in terms of a debate and you label everything racist or sexist or homophobic or whatever the classification might be, you are not helping in any way our national discourse from a First Amendment perspective. So, Stephen A. under fire, and I'm curious to see how exactly this is going to play out, but I'll always defend anybody just about in the world of speech because I don't like the idea of identity politics or cancel culture determining what can and cannot be said in this country, and I don't like the idea of policing everything. Now, I think Shohei Ohtani is an incredible story for Major League Baseball. And the end result of the controversy here probably, for some people, is going to actually put Shohei Ohtani in front of them in a way that he was not before. Because people are going to say, well, what's this story? Why is he so compelling in Major League Baseball? And I hope he goes out tonight and puts on a whale of a show at the Home Run Derby. He's the favorite to win it all. We'll be debating that on Fox Bet Live here coming up in just a moment. Speaking of, because I think this ties in. Speaking of the larger issues of speech in this country, the biggest story that went on Sunday, whether or not you guys saw it or paid attention to it or whether it was covered very substantially, were the protests that were going on in Cuba against their communist dictatorship. Biggest protest in Cuba since 1994. It's a monstrously brave thing to do in a totalitarian state to speak out against the people in positions of power, particularly those in Cuba who have been in a position of power for over 60 years now. The way that the protests took place, the videos that I saw, some of the protesters waved the American flag. And I want to tell all of you why I think that's such a significant symbol. The same thing happened in Hong Kong, and we let the people of Hong Kong down. We really did. They said China is trying to take away our basic democracies and freedom. That is why we are protesting, and they were right. China swept into Hong Kong, and they have effectively wiped out true democracy in Hong Kong. And all of those protesters have been validated. They shut down Apple Daily. Jimmy Lai is in prison now, the owner of Apple Daily. True democracy and free speech does not exist now in Hong Kong, just as those protesters said was going to happen. And so, They marched with the United States flag. The United States flag, far from, as Black Lives Matter activist in Utah said, a symbol of hate and oppression, that's what they called the United States flag. The rest of the world knows the United States flag as an incredible symbol of freedom. And what people like Colin Kaepernick, who refused to stand for our national anthem yet immediately showed up in a Colin Kaepernick t-shirt, do not understand is they haven't done the most basic level of research to recognize what's actually going on in Cuba. Do you know that they basically human traffic nurses and doctors in Cuba, send them overseas to work, and then take the difference in the money that they make compared to their salaries and pocket it as a part of the Cuban government? Did you know that basic human rights and freedoms don't exist? And right now, as you are watching and listening to me talk, there are jackbooted thugs in Cuba kicking in the doors of democracy activists and dragging them out along with their families and putting them in prison. Most people don't realize how much freedom we have and how important it is to not only preserve but also to expand freedom. It's just 90 miles south of our own borders. Cuba lives in a failed communist totalitarian state. The Bernie Sanderses of the world, the squad, they won't speak out. Earlier today on the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton show, we took calls from Cubans who still have families living in Cuba. And the stories that they told us about what their families have been through and are still going through are absolutely devastating. And so, when people decide to protest using the United States flag, I don't think many people in America really understand what the rest of the world is like. I've been saying for a while, I think America would be vastly improved. I really mean this. If every American had to live somewhere outside of the country for over a year in a country, and I don't mean like Sweden or Japan or a country that is relatively free and also wealthy. I mean borderline third world countries without basic freedoms and without basic human rights to see how much of what we have we take for granted. And this is why so many immigrants to our country are such huge supporters of United States institutions. It's why the Cubans in particular fight so hard against socialism and the idea of communism, because they have seen what happens when you allowed failed communistic practices to take root. And look, this may sound crazy, but we just saw this with defund the police. Left wingers in this country decided that they didn't want to fund police and our streets turned into killing fields. Murder skyrocketed. When you allow left-wing socialism and communism to take over, what ends up happening is Cuba and Venezuela. It is the natural result. And so people who are Cuban and have come here to flee that communism understand and support basic American freedoms in a way that many of us who were born here and don't know how fortunate we are to live in America, don't even realize. And look, this is why I came after Colin Kaepernick so aggressively. The day that he protested the American anthem, he showed up in his press briefing right after that wearing a Fidel Castro shirt. He later praised Fidel Castro to Miami reporters and talked about the fact that Cuba had done many things better than the United States. That, my friend, is 100% wrong. Bernie Sanders has praised Castro. The squad have praised Cuban dictators. Make no mistake about this. People talk a lot about being on the right side of history right now. Being on the opposite side of communistic dictators, Castro's regime and its heirs in Cuba, is 100 billion percent the right side of history, being opposed to them. Yet many people in America still are not willing to be on that side, to recognize totalitarianism and communistic failures for what they are, even in our own backyard. And so when we talk about freedom of speech and the right to protest against communism and supporting those who do so, we already turned our back on Hong Kong. We cannot turn our back on Cuba. We need to do more than just put out platitudes. I think we need to offer support to democracy activists in Cuba. Potential financial support and military support if necessary. I'm a hawk when it comes to freeing the people of Cuba. Couple of other stories that are out there. England. Somebody tweeted me, one of my buddies texted me too, and said, England is the Dallas Cowboys of international soccer. I think it's a little bit unfair to the Dallas Cowboys because they've won titles far more recently. But in terms of the hype machine always being ratcheted up and the results never actually leading up to it, England still has not won a major title since 1966. They got into the penalty kick situation after scoring 2 minutes in against Italy. They had the lead in penalty kicks, and then they choked with three straight misses down the stretch. Now, congratulations to the Italian goalie who made some great saves, but you could not get much closer to winning the Euro than England actually got. And then, much like the Dallas Cowboys, they came up short all over again. That was a really engaging final to watch. But I thought England curled up and did not perform as aggressively as they should have when they were facing all of the challenges out there in that game. They basically hoped that they were going to win 1-0, went into a defensive posture, and then hoped they were going to find a way to win in the shootout. Instead, Gareth Southgate, their overall club manager, had the same thing happen as happened back in 1996 with the English team. Novak Djokovic is on an unbelievable run. He won his 20th title at Wimbledon, 20th overall title, a bunch of them at Wimbledon, and he now is on his way to completing the Grand Slam in 1 year. He's already won the Aussie Open. He already won the French Open. Now he has won Wimbledon, and he will be a substantial favorite to win the U.S. Open as well. And if that ends up happening, he will have completed the Grand Slam for the first time, I believe, since Rod Laver for a man to do it. I think Martina Navratilova did it as well. That would be four in the same year. And he was even toying with the idea of going and pursuing the Olympic gold medal, which I don't believe has ever happened in the same year before, if he had the ability to close that out as well. But I don't think he's going to go now and compete in the Olympics. Worth mentioning, by the way, that as Djokovic has the most dominant year of his entire career in tennis, he also had COVID recently and bounced back from it pretty easily. This is pretty interesting in order to follow going forward. Novak Djokovic having one of the great tennis seasons that has ever existed in the history of the sport. The NBA continues to plummet in overall ratings. They keep putting out numbers comparing it to the bubble year last year. And it's true, they're up a little bit compared to the bubble in October of last year when they were competing head-to-head with the NFL. But in terms of a summer rating, the NBA is posting the lowest summer ratings that have ever existed. They are posting numbers akin to how many people would watch, say, the Peach Bowl. They have about half as many people watching the NBA Finals as watched the Final Four, and particular the NBA Championship game, sorry, the National Championship game between, Gonzaga and UCLA was the great shot that we got at the end. That game had more viewership, and then the national title game obviously had far more viewers as well, even though it was Baylor against Gonzaga, which is two small private schools going head-to-head. They drastically, overwhelmingly outrated the NBA. So the NBA stands are out there. They're too dumb to understand how bad things are. Two worst years in terms of NBA viewership are happening back-to-back, and it's not a coincidence that that happens right as the league has gotten more political than ever before. Conor McGregor lost quickly first round against Dustin Poirier and ended up getting his leg broken in the process. McGregor then, while he was laying on the ground, he had a 3.5-hour surgery in order to repair his leg. While he was laying on the ground, he accused Poirier's wife of sliding into his DMs, which even Dana White felt compelled to fire back at and say, hey, you know, generally speaking, we'd prefer to keep the focus on the actual match as opposed to accusing somebody's wife of sliding into the DMs. But Conor McGregor, the question I think that has to hang out there is he still the draw that he once was? I haven't seen the numbers on the pay-per-view. And is he going to be able to ever return to a high level of interest in the UFC as he continues to lose more and more? Or is his career, now that he's made several hundred million dollars, including a ton off of the whiskey that he came out with, is he now basically riding off into the sunset as a major figure in combat sports? I tend to think that the answer is yes. Ronald Acuna. And by the way, that's not to say anything about how unfortunate it was that his leg broke, but it's not as if in that first round he had an incredible performance prior to that leg breaking. The Conor McGregor that we all got used to, the guy who would storm into the ring and was an electric fighter to watch, is, in my opinion, basically no more. Ronald Acuna, this is an awful story. The Atlanta Braves, I had the unfortunate, if you're a Braves fan, like I have become a Braves fan, as a result of everything that has happened. This is what's happened so far in the Atlanta Braves 2021 season. Ronald Acuna tore his ACL. Soroka tore his Achilles again. Starting catcher is out until August. Marcell Ozuna has been arrested for beating his wife and may never play again. Who knows what's going to happen there. Yanoa broke his hand after he was frustrated on a pitching outing and punched inside of the clubhouse. And now Acuna Jr. has torn his ACL. That one is one of many things that has just gone completely wrong for the Atlanta Braves this year. Wishing Acuna to get the best, to get well. But man, that's a hit for a young guy who's as talented as him. I was looking forward to watching him in the All-Star game. And now, Braves season probably over. They haven't been able to get over 500 all season. They were one of the favorites to win the World Series after they went up, sorry Braves fans, 3-1 on the Dodgers before losing three straight last year in the NLCS. And now it appears that this season is basically gone. Did you see this story? I'm surprised it hasn't gotten more play. Kristi Noem, the governor of South Dakota, went after Ron DeSantis at the CPAC political event over the weekend and said, we have to be careful not to praise governors who decided to shut down any part of their state. And this is worth following for a couple of reasons. One, if Trump isn't going to run, then Kristi Noem versus Ron DeSantis is going to be a intriguing battle in 2024 over who the nominee might be. But if Trump does decide to run, then both Noem and Ron DeSantis will be on the incredible short list of potential nominees for Trump. If Trump were to win, they would be the favored candidate to win the Republican nomination in 2028. If Trump were to lose, they would still be the favored candidate to win probably in 2028. Because remember, if Trump wins, he can only serve one more term. If Trump lost for a second straight time, then I don't think there's any way that he would be a nominee again at the age of 82 or whatever the heck he would be. Now, make no mistake, right now Trump remains very popular in the Republican Party. In fact, I wanted to give you this data. The Texas straw poll inside of CPAC, the big event going on, Ron DeSantis got 68% of the vote. Mike Pompeo got 5%, and Donald Trump Jr. got 4% if Trump isn't included among the candidates who are potentially going to run. If Trump is running, then he got 70% of the support, and Ron DeSantis got 26% of the support. So, the big question that is hanging out there, and I think it's a pretty intriguing question, is if Ron DeSantis wins in 2022, is there any way he would be willing to run against Trump if Trump announced that he is going to run for office? Or would DeSantis seek to become his running mate, potentially sit out, wait and see whether or not there's a future opportunity for him? That is a monster story out there that is going to continue to develop over the next year. Remember, DeSantis has to run for re-election next year. All that still out there as a possibility. So, all of that going on, worth paying attention to, worth discussing. We will break all that down for you as we continue to head down the line here. But that is what is going on right now in the world of sports, politics, and more. I am Clay Travis, DBAP, unless you need to SBAP. Go subscribe to Outkick the Show, the podcast, and make sure that you subscribe to the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show. I will be on television in about 30 minutes breaking down everything in the world of sports gambling, and then I'll be on Tucker Carlson later tonight. I appreciate all of you. As always, thanks for supporting Outkick.